All right, diving right in, folks. This time we're all about HF antennas.
Specifically, multi-band wire antennas, the kind you can set up in your backyard.
We've got a classic article from LB Siebeck to guide us. Top 5 backyard multi-band wire HF antennas.
Yeah, that's a good one.
We'll see if we can't turn your backyard into, well, a global communications hub.
Ambitious, but definitely doable.
Siebeck starts off with the resonant half-wavelength dipole, right?
Yeah.
Says it's important to understand that before we get into the multi-band stuff.
He's absolutely right. It's the foundation for a lot of these designs.
Okay, so dipoles, I know they're like popular, a lot of hams swear by them, but yeah, honestly, I don't really get them. What makes them so special?
Oh.
And it was always saying higher is better. What's that about?
Okay, so Siebeck really emphasizes that the height of the antenna, you know, it's best measured in wavelengths.
Wavelengths.
Yeah, not feet.
Not feet, okay.
He even includes a handy chart. Shows the wavelength for each HF band. And when you actually look at the chart, you realize that most backyard antennas are, well, they're only a fraction of a wavelength high.
Makes sense. I mean, our backyards aren't exactly miles long, but how does that tie into the higher is better idea?
Well, think of it this way. A lower antenna, it kind of sends out its signals at a higher angle.
A higher angle.
Yeah, like you're pointing a flashlight up at the sky.
Oh, I see.
If you want those signals to go further, like really far distances, you want them closer to the horizon.
Okay.
That's where the height comes in.
So a higher antenna
sends those signals out at a lower angle.
A lower angle.
So they can skip off the atmosphere and travel much further.
It's like setting the trajectory for your signals, right?
Exactly.
I remember those radiation pattern diagrams.
Yes. He shows exactly how that works.
Okay, so it's all about bouncing those signals off the atmosphere.
And that principle, it applies to all horizontal wire antennas, by the way.
Not just dipoles.
Nope, all of them.
All right, so we've got our dipole basics down. Let's dive into those top 5 antennas.
He's a big fan of parallel feed line and antenna tuners for these.
Yeah, he says an antenna tuner is a lifetime investment.
I mean, he's not wrong. It gives you the flexibility to fine-tune your setup.
Yeah, flexibility is key.
Makes it work efficiently across all those different bands you want to use.
Okay, number 1 on the list, the broadside doublet. What's so special about this one?
Well, picture your classic dipole.
All right, got it.
But instead of the signal going out strongest at the ends, it radiates strongest from the sides.
From the sides, okay.
Yeah. Siebeck really likes this design because it's got a predictable bidirectional pattern and a really impressive 4.1 frequency range.
4.1, wow.
You can cover a lot of bands with just one antenna.
So it's like 2 flashlights strapped to a wire.
Laughs. That's a great way to put it.
Each one shining a beam of radio signals in opposite directions.
Exactly. And because you know exactly where those beams are going.
You can like target specific areas.
Yes. Or listen for signals coming from a particular direction.
Okay, so it's directional.
Very much so.
All right, but what's the catch? Every antenna has a downside, right?
Well, one thing to keep in mind is that the gain, how strong your signal is, it kind of drops off as you go down in frequency.
So it's best on the highest frequency.
Yeah, and a little weaker on the lower bands.
Makes sense. Now, Siebeck talks about using multiple doublets, like in a triangle.
Oh, that's how you get full horizon coverage.
Goal horizon coverage.
Yeah. Imagine 3 of these broadside doublets in a triangle around your yard.
Oh, I see.
By switching between them, you can send signals in every direction.
Clever. Filling in the gaps where the signal's a bit weaker.
Exactly.
He also mentioned something called the lazy H configuration. What's that about?
The lazy H, it's like a power-up for the broadside doublet.
Laughs. A power-up, okay.
You're stacking 2 doublets in a rectangle.
Rectangular shape, all
right. And you feed them in phase to basically boost the signal.
2 is better than 1.
It is. And Siebeck says the magic happens when they're spaced about half the element length apart. That maximizes gain across all the bands.
So taking 2 okay signals, combining them to make 1 super signal.
Exactly. Antennas working together.
Speaking of specialized setups, Siebeck also mentions the AJK array. What's so special about that one?
It's an end-fire array.
Okay.
Uses 2 doublets, but it's got this really unique gain pattern.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
More specialized, but it opens up some interesting possibilities for directional communication.
So many options with these doublets.
Right.
All right, let's move on to number 2, the dipole doublet. What makes this one different?
It's all about the length.
The length?
Unlike the broadside doublet, which is cut for the highest frequency, the dipole doublet is designed based on the lowest frequency you want to use.
Lowest frequency. Interesting.
It ends up being about a half wavelength long at that lowest frequency.
So it's optimized for the lower bands.
Yeah, exactly.
Does it have that same bidirectional pattern as the broadside doublet?
At the lowest frequency, yes.
Okay.
But as you go up in frequency, things get a little more interesting.
More interesting? How so?
The pattern starts to change.
Change how?
It develops, well, multiple lobes.
Lobes? What are those?
So instead of one beam, the signal gets split into multiple beams.
Oh, I see.
Kind of like a flashlight with multiple lenses.
Multiple beams, okay.
And the number of lobes usually matches the number of half wavelengths the antenna is at that frequency.
So as you go higher in frequency,
the antenna effectively becomes longer.
Electrically longer.
Yes. And you get more lobes in the pattern.
Okay, so you got to be mindful of how those lobes are oriented as you switch bands.
Exactly. You don't want to be sending a strong signal in the wrong direction.
Does Seebeek offer any advice on how to, you know, deal with that?
He does. He suggests this thing called a center support Y configuration.
Center support Y configuration.
It's kind of hard to picture, but basically you suspend the dipole doublet from the center.
Suspend it from the center.
And the ends, they kind of droop down.
Group down on it.
But form a, well, a Y shape.
A Y shape, I can see that.
It helps overcome some of those multi-lobe issues on the higher bands.
So it's a tweak that improves the performance.
Exactly.
Always a way to make things better. Okay, what's next on the list?
Number 3, fanned dipoles.
Fanned dipoles, what are those?
Imagine you're combining two dipoles for different bands.
Two dipoles.
But instead of running them parallel, you fan them out. Like at an angle.
At an angle, like bird wings.
Perfect analogy. Seebeck recommends aiming for a 2.1 frequency ratio between the two dipoles.
Okay, 2.1. And what's the benefit of fanning them out like that?
Spacing is key here. The wider you spread the dipoles, the wider the bandwidth on the higher frequency dipole.
Bandwidth, I like the sound of that.
It's like giving that higher frequency dipole more room to breathe.
To breathe, okay.
Letting it operate over a larger chunk of the band without needing constant adjustments.
Now you're talking. He gets an 80-40 meter fan dipole example, right?
He does.
What's that all about?
He compares a wide-spaced version to a close-spaced one to show how the spacing affects the 40-meter dipole.
Okay.
The wide-spaced one, it acts more like a separate 40-meter dipole.
Independent, got it.
But the close-spaced one, it has to be longer, and it ends up with a much narrower bandwidth.
So wider spacing equals better performance on that higher band.
Generally, yeah. It's all about finding that sweet spot.
Wow, my head is spinning. So much to consider with these antennas.
I know, right?
How about we take a break, come back, and tackle the last two in part two?
Sounds good. We've still got the HOHPL and the inverted L to cover.
All right, stay tuned, folks. We'll be back soon with more antenna adventures.
Ready to tackle those last two antennas on Seebeck's list.
Let's do it.
That HOHPL, horizontally oriented and polarized loop.
Yeah.
Just the name sounds, you know.
Impressive.
It does. But got to address some misconceptions right off the bat.
Oh, yeah. Like what?
Some people think that bigger loops always mean more game.
Bigger is better?
Not always.
Okay.
And there's this idea that they're omnidirectional on all bands.
Omnidirectional. So sending a signal equally in all directions.
Right. But Seebeck debunks both of those myths right away.
So bigger isn't always better, and loops aren't always omnidirectional.
Tux.
Got it.
Exactly.
So what does matter when it comes to these loops?
Well, just like with the dipoles we talked about, height plays a big role.
Height, of course.
Higher is almost always better.
Okay.
Gets you better overall performance.
Makes sense.
And while they might seem omnidirectional at first glance,
yeah,
their radiation patterns actually change depending on, well, the size of the loop and the frequency you're using.
So it's not as simple as saying loops equal omnidirectional.
It's way more nuanced than that.
Okay, I'm with you. So help me picture these HOHPLs. I'm assuming the most common shapes are squares and triangles.
You got it. Seebeck uses those shapes to show how the loops, you know, geometry affects performance. Even something as small as where you connect the feed line. Yeah, that can have a big impact.
So connecting it in the middle of a side versus at a corner, that makes a difference.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Seebeck shows how a square loop fed at a corner can create a nearly circular pattern.
Circular pattern.
But the same loop fed in the middle of a side.
Yeah.
Gives you a four-lobe pattern.
So small changes can really change the signal.
Big time. Got to be mindful of those details.
Okay, I'm getting it. Now, I'm curious about gain. How do these loops compare to those dipoles and doublets?
Well, on the lowest band you're using,
okay,
a loop might not give you a huge gain advantage over a dipole at the same height.
So not necessarily stronger.
Right. But here's the interesting thing. Loops tend to have a lower radiation angle.
A lower radiation angle.
Especially on those lower frequencies.
Okay.
And that can be a game changer for long distance communication.
Because?
Well, a lower radiation angle means your signal is more likely to skip off the atmosphere and travel further.
Ah, so even if the signal isn't super strong, it's being sent out at a better angle?
Exactly. Seebeck's models show that loops, especially the larger ones.
How large are we talking?
Like two wavelengths long?
Wow, okay.
They outperform dipoles when it comes to that radiation angle.
So it's like sending the signal on a flatter trajectory, letting it skip further across the Earth.
You got it.
This is fascinating stuff. But what about performance on the higher bands? Does that lower radiation angle still apply?
Things get a little, well, more complex on those higher bands.
More complex.
Just like they did with the dipole doublet, remember?
Yeah, those multi-lobe patterns.
Exactly. You start to see those more intricate patterns emerge.
And that lower radiation angle.
It's not as clear-cut on those higher bands.
So it's not a guaranteed advantage on every band.
Right. Seebeck even says that on those upper bands, the radiation patterns for loops, they're not necessarily more omnidirectional than doublets.
They're just different.
Yeah. It all comes down to the specific band and design you're using.
Okay, so it's not as simple as loops are omnidirectional, doublets are directional. It's all about the specifics.
Exactly. Got to look at the details.
So if those higher bands get so complicated with a loop, why would someone choose one over a doublet?
Well, remember that lower radiation angle on the lower bands?
Right. Great for DXing.
Huge advantage. Plus, loops can be really practical if you've got some natural supports around your yard.
Like what?
Trees. You can use those to hang the loop.
Makes sense.
And here's a bonus. They tend to be less prone to static buildup compared to those open-ended dipoles.
Less static? That's a win. What about noise? I've heard loops are better at dealing with certain types of interference.
That's true. Those larger closed loops.
Yeah.
They radiate less energy upwards, so they're not as sensitive to noise coming from sources nearby.
It's like they naturally filter out some of that unwanted noise.
Think of it that way, yeah.
Okay, so it's not about blocking all noise, but about reducing it.
Exactly.
Makes sense. Mm. All right, I'm ready for that last contender, the inverted L. What makes this one stand out?
The inverted L, it's kind of like a shapeshifter.
A shapeshifter, how so?
Well, in its simplest form, it's just a single wire sloping downward.
Okay, get slopey downward.
But in its more, you know, advanced setups,
yeah,
it involves a vertical section.
Vertical.
Connected to a horizontal section, forming that L shape.
I could see that.
And then you've got the radials.
Radials.
Those wires that spread out on the ground like spokes on a wheel.
Ah, right. The radials. They create a good ground system, right?
That's what they're there for.
Essential for the inverted L to work its magic.
Exactly.
Ideally, you'd have a full radial field, right? With like, those radials extending out for a quarter wavelength.
In a perfect world, yes.
But that's not always realistic, is it? Especially in a typical backyard.
Yeah, not many of us have the space for that.
I don't think my neighbors would appreciate me digging trenches all over their lawns for a full radial field.
Right. So Seebeck, he actually addresses that very question.
He does.
He compares a 160-meter inverted L with a full radial field to one with just four short radials, like 20 feet long.
Wow. So a big difference in the radial system.
Huge difference. But here's the interesting thing.
What's that?
The performance difference, it's most noticeable on that lowest band, 160 meters.
160 meters.
Yeah. On the other bands, the impact of fewer radials, it's much smaller.
So you can get away with a simpler radial system on those higher bands without sacrificing too much performance.
Pretty much. Good news for those of us with smaller yards.
Absolutely. Now, Seebeck shows some pretty unique radiation patterns for the inverted L. What were your takeaways?
What's fascinating is how it tends to have these bulbous radiation patterns.
Bulbous?
Yeah, almost balloon-shaped.
Okay, I can picture that.
On the higher bands.
So what does that mean for its signal?
It means it's sending out a decent signal in most directions.
Not as focused as some of the other antennas.
Right, not a laser beam.
But good for general communication.
Yeah, if you're not trying to target a specific area and you want coverage in multiple directions.
The inverted L could be a good choice.
Definitely worth considering.
Any other insights on this antenna before we wrap up?
Seebeck stresses the importance of a good RF ground for the inverted L.
A good RF ground, okay.
Even if you can't do a full radial field,
yeah,
having at least one buried radial connected to a good ground system makes a huge difference.
Makes sense.
And he even suggests using an automatic antenna tuner right at the feed point for ultimate convenience.
Tuning from the comfort of your shack. Sign me up.
Right. No more running back and forth to tweak settings.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground here, literally and figuratively.
We have. So much antenna knowledge.
What are some key takeaways our listeners should keep in mind when choosing a multi-band antenna?
I think Seebeck's biggest point is understanding those radiation patterns and how height affects them.
Radiation patterns and height. Got it.
He's all about experimentation, you know?
Experimentation.
Trying different types of antennas.
Yeah.
Playing with their height, seeing what works best in your backyard.
Finding what works best for you.
Exactly.
It's all about empowering hams to make informed decisions.
That's what it's all about.
Now, speaking of experimentation, Seebeck mentions an alternative to using a balanced tuner with these antennas.
Oh, yeah, he does.
I'm curious about that.
He suggests using a single-ended tuner.
Single-ended tuner, okay.
But with a common mode current filter, sometimes called a choke.
The choke.
Installed where your feed line enters your shack.
And what does that do?
It basically prevents unwanted RF currents from flowing back into your equipment.
It's like a roadblock for those stray currents.
I like that analogy.
So it lets you use a single-ended tuner without sacrificing performance.
Exactly. It's a neat little workaround.
So many clever solutions in the world of antennas.
Isn't it amazing?
Well, I think we've explored Seebeck's top five multi-band HF antennas pretty thoroughly.
We did.
The broadside doublet, the dipole doublet, fan dipoles. The HOHPL, the inverted L. We've talked about their designs, their quirks, their strengths, even how to optimize them.
Busted some myths along the way.
Busted some myths for sure. I feel like I've gained a much deeper understanding of these antennas.
Me too. It's amazing how much information Seebeck packs into that article.
It is. And it's so clearly explained.
Yeah, he's got a real knack for making complex topics understandable.
Absolutely.
I hope our listeners are feeling inspired to, you know, try some of these antennas out for themselves.
I think they are.
There's nothing quite like hands-on experience.
And that's the beauty of ham radio, right? It's all about experimentation, the joy of making contacts, the constant learning.
I need to set it better myself.
So to all our listeners out there, thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the world of multi-band HF antennas.
Thanks for listening.
We encourage you to check out Seebeck's article, dig into the technical details.
Yeah, get out there, experiment.
Most importantly, have fun. And keep those signals strong.
Until next time, 73.
It really is amazing, this sheer variety of antennas out there.
Right. There's always something new to discover, some new design to try out.
It definitely keeps things interesting. Now, before we completely wrap up this deep dive, I think it's worth touching on some of those general considerations that Seebeck mentions.
Oh, absolutely. He highlights some important points about setting up multiband antennas.
We've explored the individual antenna types.
Right.
But there are those overarching factors that come into play no matter which antenna you choose.
Exactly. And it all circles back to, you know, really grasping those radiation patterns.
Radiation patterns, okay.
And how antenna height can make or break your setup.
A height, the eternal factor in antenna performance.
Seebeck's a huge advocate for, you know, getting out there and experimenting.
Experimentation, always a good thing.
Trying different things, adjusting that height, and just seeing what gives you the best results.
In your specific backyard, for the bands you're interested in.
Right. It's not a one-size-fits-all kind of thing.
It's about finding the best fit for your unique situation.
Exactly. Your backyard, your budget, your target bands, all of that matters.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
If I have a tiny backyard,
yeah,
I'm going to have to make different choices than someone with acres of land.
Absolutely. Trade-offs are always a part of the equation.
Speaking of choices, Seebeck mentioned some interesting points about antenna tuners.
Oh, yeah, he does.
And balloons, which I think are worth discussing.
Definitely. He's a big proponent of using a balanced antenna tuner.
Balanced tuner, okay.
For most of these multi-band antennas. But he also offers an alternative for those who prefer a single-ended tuner.
Can you remind me of the difference between balanced and single-ended tuners again?
Sure. So a balanced tuner.
Yeah.
It works with a balanced feed line, like ladder line.
Ladder line, got it.
Where both conductors carry the RF current equally.
Okay.
A single-ended tuner.
Right.
It's designed for coaxial cable.
Coax, the classic.
Where one conductor is the center conductor and the other is the shield.
Okay, that's coming back to me now. So what's Seebeck's suggestion for those who want to use a single-ended tuner?
He recommends installing what's called a choke.
A choke?
Sometimes called a common mode current filter. Right where your feed line enters your shack.
At the entry point.
Yeah, and this choke, it essentially acts as a barrier.
A barrier. Oh.
To prevent those unwanted RF currents from, you know, flowing back into your equipment.
It's like a bouncer for your radio setup, only letting the good currents in.
I love that analogy. And with a choke in place, you can use that single-ended tuner without compromising performance.
Clever workaround. It seems like there's always more than one way to approach things in ham radio.
That's what keeps it interesting. Always a new solution to explore, a new challenge to tackle.
Well, I think we've given LBCBIC's top five multiband HF antennas a pretty thorough examination.
We've really dug deep into those designs.
The broadside doublet with all its variations, the dipole doublet, fan dipoles.
The HOHPL, the inverted L, we covered them all.
We talked about radiation patterns, strengths, quirks, even how to optimize them for different bands.
And we busted some myths along the way.
Busted myths, definitely. I feel like I've come away with a much clearer understanding of these antennas.
Me too. CBIC's article is such a treasure trove of information.
It is. And he explains things so well.
He has a gift for making the complex understandable.
Absolutely. And I really hope our listeners feel empowered to try some of these antennas for themselves.
There's no substitute for hands-on experience in this hobby.
Exactly. It's the experimentation, the thrill of making contacts. That's what keeps us coming back for more.
And the learning never stops. There's always something new to discover in the world of ham radio.
So true. To all our listeners out there, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into multiband HF antennas.
It's been a pleasure sharing this knowledge with you.
We encourage you to seek out CBIC's article, delve into those technical details.
And get out there and build something. Experiment, have fun, and most importantly, keep those signals strong.
Until next time, 73.